Well, hello everybody and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 538 of Linux in the Ham Shack. This is our short topics episode, and it is a short topics episode on the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. But before we go ahead and get into our short topics for tonight, we'll go ahead and introduce ourselves for the on assignment Cheryl W5MOO. I'm Russ K5TUX.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
Who, when he comes in hot. So
it's not my fault. It's these crappy microphones.
That's okay. We just know how enthusiastic you are. And because you're so incredibly enthusiastic and recording like remotely tonight, I guess we'll let you go ahead and start off with the first story.
Yeah, it sounds good. This one is from the AWRL. But this is the FCC to require two-factor authentication for CORS users. The Federal Communications Commission has announced on an upcoming change to the Commission Regulation System, also known as the CORS, that licensees use to pay any application or regulatory fees, manage or reset password on existing FRNs, or request a new FRN. Beginning March 29, 2024, multi-factor authentication will be implemented. Users will be prompted to request a six-digit secondary verification code, which will be sent to the email addresses or address associated with each username. The user then will need to enter the code into CORS before they can continue. The FCC recommends that the users confirm that they have access to their username, account, email, and to add secondary email address if need be. So this is something that most of us are pretty used to these days with almost everything going two-factor. It's good that the FCC is finally catching up on the security of our licenses.
Yep, absolutely. Although the two-factor being email is probably my least favorite of the two factors. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather it be a phone number or an authenticator just because, I mean, I guess for most people, email is probably just as convenient, but I don't know. I like going through the authenticators.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that this is just the first step so that they can, you know, maybe get to that point at some point in the future. But like, you know, this is at least a good first step.
Yep, absolutely. Always good to have 2FA at this point. We're going through the growing pains of implementing two-factor authentication across our network for like all services. And you know how that is. You have disparate sources. You have multiple vendors. Everybody does everything differently. And yeah, trying to put it all together. It's been fun. Yeah. Probably going to be a year-long process.
Absolutely.
Is what it is. But that being said, let's move on to what everybody's talking about. You know, this kind of stuff doesn't usually make the news, but it's making the news this time. The Solar Eclipse CUSO party. Not the CUSO party specifically, but the eclipse part. Especially around here, because we're going to be very close to totality. So, you know, everybody's all excited. The HamSci Festival of Eclipse Ionospheric Science will occur April 8th, 2024 during Spectacular North American Solar Eclipse, during the Spectacular North American Solar Eclipse. And one of the events is the Solar Eclipse CUSO Party. Dates and times will be the 8th of April, 2024 from 1400 to 2400 UTC. Partial eclipse begins around 1710 UTC in Texas and ends at around 2040 UTC in Maine. Participants are encouraged to operate before, during, and after the eclipse passes over the continental United States. Doing so will create baseline data, pre- and post-eclipse, and eclipse-influenced data during annularity? Annularity? Sure. I'm pretty sure that's the first time in 54 years I'm seeing that word. During annularity or totality for the research team. I can guess from context what it means, but yeah. Objectives to generate observations of propagation by the reverse beacon network and PSK reporter event logs before, during, and after the eclipse on the amateur bands for the purpose of ionospheric sounding. The Solar Eclipse CUSO Party, SECUP, S-E-Q-P, is unique among ham radio competitions. Oh, they're making it a competition. Okay. As it awards points for two-way CUSOs, ham-to-ham contacts via radio. What did this come from? Why is...
why are they from their website? Not my fault, I swear.
It's like, does anyone not know what a CUSO is? Okay. Anyway, and bonus points for reception reports from skimmers, RBN nodes, and the like. Please be aware that the SECUP is one of many events to be held during the HamSci Festivals of Eclipse Ionospheric Science. You are welcome to participate in more than one event. Each event has its tools page accessible from the festival link above. Those words were weirdly quoted. So is that really rules or just more like guidelines or suggestions? Yeah.
Mere suggestions, me
think. Mere suggestions. I don't know. But yeah, that came from hemside.org, and wow, read really strangely, but okay. It's almost like ChatGPT got a hold of it. But yeah, there you go. Yeah, the world, or at least the U.S., the central U.S. anyway, is a buzz about the eclipse. Now, everybody seems to know the path, like they've seen the path of the eclipse drawn 500 times on the evening news. So, and like, you know, around here, everybody's like trying to get the chambers of commerce to like beef up, you know, municipalities to be prepared for the onslaught of eclipse viewers. It's like, wow, it's an eclipse.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the buzz is all about everywhere, though. I mean, even up here, you know, we're stopping by some wineries and stuff like that. And, you know, they're talking about getting prepped for, you know, the eclipse and everything. You know, got to get the barns open and everything else for the eclipse. So, yeah, apparently it's going to be a big thing all around for all the areas that are, you know, definitely near the totality lines.
Yeah, especially for places like in rural Arkansas that are going to be in, you know, totality that don't normally see, you know, people. So yeah, it should be fun. Anyway, lots to do, and the eclipse is coming up very quickly, so I guess you need to figure out where your glasses are, where you're going to be, and what you're going to be doing, because you don't have long to figure it out.
Yeah, definitely get the glasses.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I'll let you go ahead and do this one. Hopefully this one, I actually did like cut this one down and like proofread it, so hopefully it reads okay.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, senators introduce amateur radio legislation. U.S. Senators Roger Wicker and Roger Blumenthal have introduced legislation to give amateur radio operators the right to install their antennas and serve the community. Sure. HOA rules often prevent hams from installing outdoor antennas on residential properties, even though this communication method has proven to be essential in emergencies and natural disasters. Quote, because communications during natural disasters is often hindered, we should be making every attempt to give folks more options, unquote, Wicker said. Quote, reliable access can make the difference between life and death in an emergency. Our legislation removes roadblocks for amateur radio operators looking to help their friends, families, and neighbors, end quote. Quote, our measure will help clarify the rules so ham radio enthusiasts can successfully continue their communications. In the face of emergency or crisis, they help to provide vital, life-saving information that allow listeners to properly and safely respond, unquote, Blumenthal said. The Amateur Radio Emergency Preparedness Act of 2024 would require homeowner associations to accommodate the needs of amateur radio operators by limiting the scenarios in which they can ban, prevent, or require the approval of installation or use of amateur radio antennas. Among other provisions, this legislation would prohibit homeowner association rules that would prevent or ban amateur radio antennas, clarify the approval process for installing amateur radio antennas, and give amateur radio operators a private right of action. The Amateur Radio Emergency Preparedness Act of 2024 has been endorsed by the Amateur Radio Relay League, and this came to us from the Daily Leader. So, yeah. There are some provisions in there that, you know, you do have to do some mindful screening of some of the antenna pieces that either come close to the property lines or are viewable from the property lines, at least within the context of it. So hopefully this will make its way through and qualm some operators that want to put ludicrous antennas inside of their deed-restricted communities.
Yeah, this isn't the first time this kind of legislation has made its way into Congress, but this is the most recent one for sure. And the Daily Leader, just if anybody is interested, is a publication that comes out of Mississippi. One of the senators is from Mississippi, and the other one is from Connecticut. So apparently these are places where deed-restricted locations have been a problem. So they're co-sponsoring the bill.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it makes it through this time. This has only been, what, the third, fourth, fifth time that this has tried to go through Congress? I mean, you know, they can't do anything useful anyway in Congress. So, you know, might as well make a new antenna rule.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is the kind of thing that might make it through Congress because it doesn't affect anyone, or it doesn't, you know, stop lining someone's pockets or whatever.
Oh. They'll find a way to make it line.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, there will be
a special grant for studying the effects of, you know, disappointing the homeowners association.
All right. Anyway, that's it for the amateur radio topics for tonight. So we're going to move into open source. And the first one here is the R36S Retro Handheld. The R36S is a premium-looking retro handheld with a super affordable price, around $40, along with free shipping. With a surprisingly great, the superlatives, they just need to stop. With a surprisingly great 3.5-inch IPS 480p screen, 480p, two analog sticks, and an overall stylish design, the R36S really seems too good to be true. So without going into long explanations, here is a list of every console that comes stock with the R36S. CS1, the CS2, the CS3, MAME, PC Engine, NES, SNES, N64, Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, Nintendo DS, Mega Drive, Genesis, Dreamcast, Game Gear, Neo Geo, PlayStation 1, PlayStation Portable. The R36S comes equipped with just about everything you'd expect in a retro handheld. ABXY buttons, a D-pad, start, select, and function, two analog sticks, R1, L1, R2, L2, power and reset, volume keys, two USB-C ports, a headphone jack, two micro SD slots, that wonderful, surprisingly great 3.5-inch 480p IPS screen, and a 3,500 milliamp hour removable battery. And this came from Bubble Retro, because apparently it's a slow open source Newsweek.
I heard about this device from was it Linux Unplugged or something like that? They were talking about it. And on a whim, I just blindly ordered one from AliExpress. And it actually showed up. It actually showed up right before we left for this trip. So my daughter has been using this thing. And I do have to say, like, the build quality is pretty good. The software package and setup for actually controlling the emulation engines and the setup of those things is really, really, really nice. Arc OS, even though I think it's like, it looks semi-defunct, but apparently not defunct enough to where it's not being used. So I did include in the show notes here, obviously, Arc OS's wiki. But yeah, my daughter's been glued to this thing since we got it. There's some weird quirky things here and there about it. You have to hit the reset button sometimes to get some of the other game engines to show up. It comes preloaded with like 10,000 games. It's totally, yeah, I'm sure this is totally non-legit to own or sell in the U.S. But, get it off of AliExpress for $40. I don't think you can go wrong. The SD cards, I would recommend replacing those with higher quality SD cards, and expect to replace them pretty much regularly, just because of use. Other than that, I think for the price point, I wanted to include it in the open source, partially for the Arc OS, and then also because it's just such a cool little device for doing retro Arch games and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds kind of cool. It's got that surprisingly good 3.5-inch screen, and it almost makes me want to get it.
Yeah. But it plays like all those games like really well. I mean, like, even the Dreamcast games are surprisingly good. It has a crazy taxi on there. But when I get home, I'm going to try to put like Hydro Thunder and stuff like that on there, because we have a whole bunch of Dreamcast games. So we're gonna try loading it up, and I'll give some experience with that how well that goes. But for some of the other emulators, God, they have like 1,000 games plus in each one of them. It's crazy, including like all the old Game Boy games, the monochromatic Game Boy games. They have a ton.
Well, I'll be interested to check this out. I'll probably pick up one too, because I build the stand-up arcade games that do this same thing, but it might be nice to have a handheld that does the same. I'd be curious to see how the performance is compared to a full-blown retro emulator using a Pi and all that. So
yeah, I mean, a Pi would be definitely more powerful, but like, again, this is real surprising how well this hangs in there. The only time I see it kind of wig out a little bit is in the high, like, probably like the Dreamcast games are probably the stressiest type ones on this particular architecture. For the price point, it was definitely definitely worthwhile just to even have it as a throwaway. And that battery lasts surprisingly long. Like, she played it all day while we were, or all the whole time while we were flying from Montana to here. And she didn't have to recharge it until we got back to the VRBO.
Yeah, cool. Well, apparently this thing is surprising. So, gotta get one. So if it plays like Super Mario Kart, the N64 version, then that game alone will sell it.
Yeah, she was playing Mario Kart on one of the emulators. I don't know. I think maybe it was the Nintendo 64 one. So, and it looked fine to me.
Yeah, very good. Well, it's way cheaper than trying to find an N64 and the cartridge. I can tell you that much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I guess the next one is mine to read. And this is GNOME 46 officially released with improvements galore. That's what we like to hear. The GNOME project today announced the stable release of GNOME 46, Kathmandu, and the latest update of its hugely popular open source desktop environment. You'll be able to benefit from the changes on offer soon. Changes on offer soon. This literally came from the, Ubuntu site. Anyway. Sorry. As Ubuntu 24.04 LTS is released on April 25th, and it will offer GNOME 46 out of the box, albeit with the usual Ubuntification. So this means that when I build our disk for Hamvention, it will have GNOME 46 on it. Quick overview of some of the key changes in GNOME 46. They have an enhanced search experience in Nautilus. That's good because it generally was not the greatest. OneDrive file access. Oh, that's kind of cool. Notifications can be expanded, collapsed. Remote login with RDP. Well, that's insane. new app launching shortcuts. They always loud that, remote access stuff. And then they say, it's got to be asterisks. Well, maybe not with Wayland. Revamped settings with new panels, options, tap to click enabled by default on touchscreens, accessibility improvements to Orca, sharper UI and font rendering. This includes fractional scaling, variable refresh rate support, experimental, and new fallback avatars, and updated core apps. Yeah, a lot of stuff's coming out about this. I haven't updated my GNOME at home yet, but I did. I was also looking that we're already up to KDE's Plasma 6.02, so we've actually had 2 point releases for KDE since it rolled out at the beginning of the month. So I'm sure GNOME will have a few extra patches and releases. Anytime they do a big release like this, they're always going to have some stuff that kind of squeak through in testing. So expect that to be there. But I'll have a clean look at this when I get home, probably in the next couple days.
All right. Very good. Looking forward to see what the new LHS Ubuntu build looks like with 24.04. Because I was at a Hamfest on Saturday, and I did get a couple of the 2204 ones on USB stick out into the wild. So it'll be good to have that for Hamvention. I'm assuming you're going to have it for Hamvention.
The software?
The 2404, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to. That's the plan. I mean, it'll be released with enough time for me to do the building and everything else. And Darren in the chat room has asked about whether I'd include Node-RED in there. And I will definitely take a look at it and see if I can just get it plugged into that distro. So we'll hopefully be able to do that for you.
All right. Sounds good. So we didn't have any Linux in the Ham Shack topics for tonight. So I just threw one in there. I don't plan on going very deeply into this because it may or may not turn into another deep dive episode. It all depends on how things go, I guess. There was, I put Hamlog in here, and you know what? That is wrong. It's not Hamlog, it's HRD log. So people are probably familiar with HRD log. It started out as a logger, an online logger, kind of like Club Log for Ham Radio Deluxe, but then it kind of morphed into a more generalized logger. It still doesn't seem to be particularly contest friendly, but it is a general logger if you want to use it. It's one of the ones that Grid Tracker interfaces with. It has the notion of like an API token, so you can code and send data to it. And the only reason it was one of the, well, I think it was the only logger that I was not sending my Grid Tracker data to, or just my log data to, in general, mostly because it was HRD log, and second, mostly because the interface was really kind of horrible. However, it has been rewritten, and it's now ham365 log. I think it's like ham365.net is the URL for it, which I'll put that in the show notes. It kind of has the same aesthetic of HRD log, but it definitely renders better. It looks much better in a browser. The navigation is better. Still uses the same back end. So if you put data into HRD log, it'll be in ham365 or vice versa. It integrates with Grid Tracker and probably other programs that have access to its API and use its upload token It's not, I haven't really gotten into it. I've looked at some of the features it has, like it has a DX cluster, it has a gray line map, it has solar conditions, it has a contact mapper, you know, some of the things you definitely want in a logging software. And of course it's web hosted. One of the things I really don't like about it is it's ad supported. So that's kind of annoying. I don't know. I didn't get far enough into it to see if there was like a payment gateway where you could get those removed. It does allow you to customize your online profile. It gives you a presence. It allows other people to see your logs if you want them to be able to. It's searchable data. You know, since I can dump the data into it, into, you know, with GridLog, just like everything else, I'm now logging to 6 sources. So every contact I make goes 6 places, not counting just local file storage. So I think I'm pretty well backed up. It does have Logbook of the World integration, EQSL, so on and so forth. You can even set up virtual or digital QSL cards using images and so on and templates. So it's interesting. I'll definitely have a deeper look at it as time goes on. The reason I've even brought it up is because one of the people who has apparently started listening to us recently, Claudio Cordeglio, who we mentioned, I think, on the last episode in our social media roundup, his call sign is IW1QLH, and he is the developer of HRD Log, Ham365, and so forth. And he was also letting me know that there is a mobile version. There's an Android/iPhone version of this as well. Although I think the phone clients are only for recording data and then uploading them to the main database. It doesn't look like you can retrieve data out of Ham365 onto your local device. I don't know if that's a feature that'll be coming, but maybe this is one of those things where we get Claudio on as a, you know, an interviewee, so we can discuss all of the finer details of HRD Log, Ham365, A365 Log, and, you know, whatever the Android one is called. Probably that too. So just wanted to put it out there as a potential topic, and if anybody wants to investigate any of these technologies, you know, check them out. And if you have any thoughts or comments or any interesting things to say about any of these products, or even if you, you know, already use them, let us know. I'd be interested to hear about it. Yeah, and there's no chit-chat, so... Which is fine. It doesn't have to be.
I was just resetting my password on there, because apparently my password was not working.
So I would say use Ham365, not HRD Log.
Yeah, that's what I've been. So
yeah, much nicer interface. Yeah. So I don't know anything about its core. I don't know what it's written in. I don't know if it's open source. I didn't get that far into any of that, but you know, at some point, I'm sure we will. And if Claudio hears this and wants to get back to us about doing an interview about his software, we're all about it. So hopefully he'll hear this. And if he doesn't, then I'll reach out to him. Well, with that said, I'm going to read our one announcement here that we have. Don't have any feedback, haven't had any in a while. So if anybody wants to send us feedback, well, we did have the feedback from Claudio, but it was more of a sales pitch. So we can call it feedback, I guess. But the one announcement that we have, if you didn't pick up on it on the last episode, our GoFundMe Hamvention campaign for going to Xenia this year is completely funded. I've disabled it, so no more donations are possible. But just wanted to send out a heartfelt and hearty thank you to everybody who donated to that campaign. And as previously stated, with any luck, that will be the very last one. And hopefully our regular subscribers will be able to carry us going forward, which would be great. And we really appreciate that as well. And with that, I'm just going to let Bill here, since Cheryl's not here, run down through the new subscribers, supporters, and whatnot. And then we'll let you get back to whatever it was you were doing.
Yeah, there we go. So this particular episode, we had no new subscribers or Patreons, but on Facebook, we had Harold Greiner, Steve Cashmer, Mike Stefani, and Claudio Cordeglio. Yeah, the one you just talked about, IW1QLH. On Twitter, X, we had none. On Instagram, we had arileco.iq21c_APS. That's totally generated. No one on Mastodon. On YouTube, we had Glenn Stewart. On Discord, we had Alex AU and Andrew A. On the mailing list, we had W0MET joined us. And on live chat tonight, we had quite a few active people. We had Dan, KB6NU, Darren, VK6EK, Russ, KC5CNT, Tony, K4XSS, Jill, K1TTZ, Steve, KJ5T, Ted, WA0EIR, Bill, N3AJ, and Mike, K6GTE.
All right, that's a nice list. We appreciate everybody listening to the live program. Hope you enjoyed it. And for everybody else who wasn't able to catch it live, we hope you enjoy the released episode. And we also hope you have a great week and will join us on the next one, which, of course, will be a weekender. We're looking forward to that. Should be fun. And we certainly hope to see as many of you as possible in Xenia in May. We're really looking forward to it. But with that, we're going to go ahead and get on out of here and let you get back to whatever it was you were doing. So have a great night. This has been episode number 538 of Linux in the Ham Shack. And for the On Assignment Cheryl, W5MOO, I'm Russ, K5TUX.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.